Okay, at this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our family speakers, Robert and Perla, to share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Welcome, Robert, and welcome, Perla. So, you're up.
Of course, the alcoholics first.
She gets the rebuttal.
She gets the rebuttal, that's right. Exactly. I just want to read a couple things before I get started that I think is appropriate for this meeting. I've never done a family meeting like this, so this is for me. It says, suppose though that we are approached by a drug addict who nevertheless has had a, this is from the Language of the Heart, Bill's Grapevine writings, and it says, suppose though that we are approached by a drug addict who nevertheless has had a genuine alcoholic history. There was a time when such a person would have been rejected. Many early AAs had the almost comical notion that they were pure alcoholics, guzzlers only, no other serious problems at all. When alcoholic ex-cons and drug users first turned up, there was a much pious indignation. What will people think? Chanted the pure alcoholics. Happily, this foolishness has long since evaporated. One of the best AAs I know is a man who had been 7 years on the needle before he joined up with us. But prior to that, he had been a terrific alcoholic, and his history proved it. Therefore, he could qualify for AA, and this he certainly did. Since then, he has helped many AAs and some non-AAs with their pill and drug troubles. Of course, that is strictly his affair, and it's in no way the business of the AA group to which he belongs. In this group, he is a member because, in actual fact, he is an alcoholic. Now, I have one more reading I'd like to share with you. And this is from the family afterwards, which I think is perfect for this meeting. It's a couple paragraphs, so bear with me. Henry Ford once said a wise remark to the effect that experience is a thing of supreme value in life. This is out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That experience is a thing of supreme value in life. Oh, sorry. That is true only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. The alcoholic's past thus becomes the principal asset of the family, and frequently it is almost the only one. This painful past may be infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. And with it, you can avert death and misery for them. Like I said, my name is Robert, and I'm an alcoholic.
Robert.
I just think that, it's an honor to be of service to others, and no matter what situation or how we do it, I think it's very important that we do it, I think it was very important for me to read those two readings. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1985. In 1984, I was sent to rehab in Oxnard at a hospital. I'm not going to say the name. They're closed, but I don't care. I'm not going to say their name because I had a problem, and Oxnard, as maybe all of you know, it's only 3.5 hours drive. It took me 3 days to get there, right? Because I kept turning around and coming back home. And I did that for 2 days. And on the third day, my wife took off work and she drove me to Oxnard. I had never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. I had never heard of any 12-step program at that time, right? And so I was like, I was scared. I didn't know what they were going to do to me there, you know? And when we arrived there, and we stayed the night in Oxnard. In the morning, we drove into the hospital. And I was begging her, and I was crying, to please take me home. I won't do it anymore, right? Famous words, right? I won't drink anymore. I won't use anymore. I won't, right? I stayed there for 21 days. That's all my insurance covered. I left there. I was crying because I was scared to leave, right? First, I was scared to get there. Then I was scared to leave. Excuse me. So what they do a little celebration. They give me a coin. You know, it wasn't a 30-day coin or anything like that. It was a coin from the hospital, you know. I got home. Somebody had broken into our house because I was doing other things. You know, I was selling stuff, you know, and somebody had broken our house. And so I went looking for them because I thought I knew who it was. And I found a bag. That's what I found. And just a few weeks later, I was in Tulare County Jail, and I got out of jail. I had some stuff left that I was using, and I proceeded to do that. And then when that was all gone, I felt the same way that I felt before I went into that rehab. And that was loneliness. That was sadness. That was just a bunch of emotions that I didn't know how to even deal with, you know. And the only solution that I had was the solution they gave me in that rehab, and that's to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. They gave me a phone number that I didn't use, and they told me that there was meetings in our area, which I didn't know about, right? And so there began my journey, you know, and I found a sponsor who was my sponsor for the first year and a half, and he took me through the first 3 steps. Can you tell me when I'm running out of time?
There's a clock right
here. Oh, perfect. And how long do I have?
I guess 30 and 30.
30 and 30. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. And where was I? So I had got out of jail. I had been used the rest. I had a sponsor. I was going to meetings. I had him for a year and a half. I was in the other program, actually, and there wasn't too many people at that time who had very much time. We had a guy there that had 10 years and another guy who had 2 years who was my sponsor. And everybody else had a one or less, right? And so my sponsor took me through the first 3 steps in my first year. I wrote an inventory. I did not share it. I put it in the drawer, and I started running on self-will, you know. And because I did that, my MO was like, honey, I'll be back. When I was drinking, I'll be back in an hour, and I may be back in an hour, but usually it was a day or maybe a couple of weeks or maybe even a couple of months, right? And then I would come back home, and she would take me back. I don't ask me why, but she would take me back. And so I've always been a cheater, a liar, you know, and so I continued those defects in recovery. You know, I was still cheating on my wife when I was new in recovery, you know, and it took me a little while to stop that stuff, you know. It's like I said, I had written an inventory. I had not shared it. This man started to appear in my life, and he would ask me to come by his house, and I would say yes, and then I wouldn't go. And then I'd see him somewhere else at the video store or something, and he'd ask me again, come by the house. And I said I would, and then I wouldn't go, right? The third time he asked me to come by his house, I said yes, and soon after that, I went to his house. I was not looking for a sponsor. I had a sponsor, but he became my second sponsor. My first sponsor was named Jack. My second sponsor was named Tom. And so he became my sponsor for the next 26, 27 years, you know, and so we did a lot of work on me, right? Focus on me, you know. I never did that before, you know. And slowly, you know, before that even happened, I had separated from my wife because they say that this is an inside program, right? This works from the inside out, right? And when I was living that way in recovery, the program started to work in my life and said, you cannot continue to live like this. And so I came home one day and I told my wife, I'm leaving. And she's like, well, where are you going? I go, I don't know. Well, when are you going to be back? I said, I don't know, right? And she kept asking me, well, when are you going to be back? So I finally said, 2 weeks, right? And 2 weeks turned into 6 months, right? And I finally came back home. But in the meantime, I found that sponsor, and we started working the steps again. And I did an inventory, and I did share it with him, you know. And when I came back to home, my wife had started going to Al-Anon meetings. And her story, I don't want to tell it, but it's her story, right? She found a sponsor of her own, right? And so she started working at her steps. You know, when I came back, I started to change. You know, I have not cheated on her since then. But when I had 2 years clean or sober, my sponsor and her sponsor said, we need to get together, right? We need to meet. And I'm like, why? And they're like, you just don't worry, Robert. We're just going to meet. And so we went to our usual place, which was Denny's. At that time, everybody used to go to Denny's, right? And we were talking, and they said, pick a date. And I said, July 15th. They go, that's when you're going to get married. And I'm like, wait. I'm not ready for marriage. Me and my wife had been living together for 12 years now. We had 2 kids. And I wasn't ready for marriage. I didn't know how to make a commitment, right? That's what it all comes down to. I did not know how to make a commitment. But this program, like I said, works from the inside out. And I heard that voice say, hang on. I go, okay. I picked a date, July 15th. And they go, that's. And so we started looking all over the place, and we found a place in Templeton. And the only date that they had was July 15th, right? And that's God working in our lives, right? We've been together now, I think 48 years, yeah. You know, so, thank you. Alcoholics Anonymous has saved our marriage, but it hasn't been all smooth sailing, right? I had to learn how to be a man. I had to learn how to be a husband. I had to learn how to be a father, you know, which I had really no clue, you know. I come from a family of 14 kids, you know, and most of my brothers had alcohol or drug problem. My sisters all married alcoholics or drug addicts, you know, and those were my examples, you know, and that's who I looked up to, you know, and so that's why I lived that well. I don't know if that's why, but I chose to live that lifestyle, right? But, you know, it's been a journey, you know, and I know my wife had cancer when I had 8 years, and she had to go over to Stanford and stay there for 3 months. I had never taken care of my children by myself. As a matter of fact, I had never taken care of my children, period, right? I was the fun dad, right? I took them, practiced baseball, practiced softball, practiced all different sports, right? I was the good guy, right? And my wife was a disciplinary, you know? And when my daughter turned 13, my wife and her used to go back and forth, right, arguing. And I told her, why are you always arguing? And she says, okay, you be the disciplinary, right? And oh boy, that didn't work out very well, right? It was very hard. I didn't know anything about it. You know, when she turned 16, when she turned 16, she was getting dressed one night, and she says, I'm going to a party. I'm like, no, you're not. And she says, yes, I am. And I'm like, no, you're not. And she took off running out the door, and I caught her about a block down the road, and I threw her on my shoulders, and I carried her back to the house. But like I said, I hadn't learned how to discipline yet. I knew how to discipline the way my parents didn't discipline me, and that was with the belt, right? And so I took her in the room, and she fought me, but I took the belt to her, and that was the only skills that I had, you know? And I left marks on her legs, right? And the next day when she went to school, her friends wanted her to call the cops on me, you know, and she wouldn't do it, you know, and I'm grateful for that today, you know, and so, you know, it hadn't been easy. Our son is a little easier, right? He's made his way in life without issues, not without alcohol, without drugs, right? They do drink, him and his wife, but it's like, I don't know how they do it. They just have a drink, right? I don't know how they do that shit, but they do, right? And when I first got sober, my wife would go out and she'd have a drink and she'd like drink like part of it. And I'm like, aren't you gonna drink that, right? Aren't you gonna finish that? And no, they're just drinking to enjoy themselves. They're not drinking like I did for oblivion, right? To stuff all those feelings, all those emotions, all that had happened to me in my life, you know, I'm a child of sexual, sexual molestation, yeah, and so all those, that stuff I'd been carrying all my life, right, that and a whole lot more, and I never shared that with anybody until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And you know what I found out when I did my inventory, that I had a big, big resentment against my mother, you know, and I didn't understand that, right? But when I went back into my life and I remembered that when I was 16, that I got my girlfriend pregnant, right? And my mom was a religious lady. She went to church as much as I go to meetings, and that's a lot, right? I go 6 meetings a week still. So and her mom, they belonged to the same church, and they did not believe in abortion, right? But when my girlfriend got pregnant, they didn't ask me. They just said she's going to have an abortion, right? And I always wondered, you know, if we would have had a baby, if we would have this, would have that, right? What it would be like, you know? And so a lot of that stuff I carried with me into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And my sponsor said, you have a really big resentment against your mom. And in family, Mexican family of 14 kids, you don't have resentments against your mom, right? Mom is precious, right? And you don't talk bad about her. You don't say things that somebody else outside the house might hear, right? Or even my brothers, they probably would have beat my ass, you know? But that's what it was, you know? And it took me a long time to get rid of that resentment. I think I had like 15 years when I finally released that resentment, you know? And I'd worked on that, and I prayed for her. And I use a prayer that we have in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. In one of the stories, page 552, It says, pray for them for 14 days straight. And my sponsor used to tell me, if you miss a day, you start over, right? And so that's what I would have to do if I missed a day. And so I tried not to miss a day, right? And just over the years, you know, I've been trying to grow up. I had to learn how to wash dishes. I had to learn how to mop floors. I had to learn how to sweep floors. I had to learn how to make beds. I had to learn how to be a dad, right? For whatever reason, I didn't learn that, right? And I don't want to blame it on my parents, because some of my brothers did that stuff, right? And it always puzzles me, you know? And so, and that's taken time, you know? It's like we used to fight about the dishes. I want to do the dishes in the morning. She wants me to do the dishes at night, right? And it took a while before I figured out if I just do them in the morning, it would save me a lot of heartache, a lot of problems if I just do that, right? And then I figured out that I don't just have to wash the dishes. I have to clean the stove, and I have to sweep, and I have to mop, and all that stuff goes with washing the dishes. My wife does all the cooking, right? And so I had to learn that, you know, and... I'm sorry, honey. It's true, but I'm sorry. Yeah. I can't tell you like how much I love this woman today. I really, really do. You know, sometimes I look at her and I'm like, "Oh my God, you are so lucky." I'm not even kidding, right? I don't even say it to her. Just in my own mind, it's like, "What? You are so lucky." You know, and actually my nephews and nieces used to tell me that I was lucky. But we know who the lucky one is. It's me, you know. When it came to making the bed, the last one out of the bed makes the bed. She was always the last one out of the bed. And she didn't make the bed. So I started making the bed. I don't care who's the last one out of the bed anymore. If the bed's not made, I make it. Right? And my sponsor used to tell me, "Robert, if it bothers you, just do it." It took me years to figure that out, right? I'm serious. This just doesn't happen overnight, you know? And so, I was talking about my kids earlier, and when my wife went to Stanford for a couple months to have chemo, you know, and I didn't know how to take care of kids, and I remember the day when I got down on my knees. I wanted to be eye to eye with them, and I got down on my knees, and we just, all three of us came together, because they were scared just like I was scared, right? And we just held each other and we just cried together, you know? And that's the best I could do as a dad at that time, right? I couldn't explain them. I couldn't tell them what was going on. I just like hugged them and loved them and was there for them, you know. But the important thing about that time was the people that came by our house to drop off meals. I already told you I don't know how to cook, right? I don't cook, still. I can cook for myself, but you probably wouldn't need it. You know, and so I'm grateful for her cooking. It's so good. So good, yeah. She cooks everything, Italian, Mexican, Japanese, everything, right? So I'm very grateful, you know. And I keep coming to Alcoholics Anonymous because not only did it save my marriage, it saved my life, you know. And I know what I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I have a responsibility to carry this message to others in hopes that they too can find this way of life, right? And so I do that. I do that a lot. You know, I go to hospitals and institutions. Right now, I go with a friend of mine. He's here today, and we go out to the state hospital. It was once a month, but now it's twice a month. And I've been taught that since I had 6 months in recovery to go to institutions. And I used to go to the youth authority, and I used to go to the prison here in San Luis. I've gone to continuation schools, Wherever I've been asked to go and share my experience, strength, and hope, I go, you know, because I was taught that, that whenever you're asked, I didn't want to do this. She says before we left, she goes, I'm not going. And I'm like, what? She goes, I'm not going. I'm like, that's okay. I'll do my pitch, and then I'll do your pitch. You know? But, you know, she's here. She's here. Her pitch is way better than I could do it. Yeah, it's better than mine, that's for sure. You know, I'm so grateful. We got married on January, July. Yeah. July 15th. Yeah. So legally, we've been married 36 years. But together, we've been together for 48 years. And she says she counts all of them because the first 12 were the hardest, right? And they were. And sometimes it still is. You know, I'm still learning how to grow up. I'm still learning how to be a man. I'm still learning a lot of things, you know. But what Alcoholics Anonymous taught me was to show up on time. So today I was telling her, we're going to be late. We're going to be late. And she's like, who cares? I'm always late. She's always late, right? She's always late. But I was taught to be on time, you know? And I get all nervous, like, we got to go, we got to go, you know? And so we made it here on time, you know? God always takes care of us no matter what, you know? And, but because you guys taught me how to be on time, I started being on time to work. Used to call in sick for work, but actually she called in sick for me, right? And she trimmed the shrubs, and she mowed the lawn, and she took care of the house, but the outside had to look better so that people wouldn't know what was going on in the inside of our house. And it was not a happy house, you know. Eventually, my drinking slowed down a lot when I was 19. I was blacking out a lot, right? And one day I woke up and she had two black eyes, and I don't remember how they got there, right? So my alcoholic mind says, well, use more drugs, right? And that worked for a while, but eventually that didn't work. At the end of my using, I had my hand around her throat, telling her to give me my drugs, right? Because I was the dealer. I was selling the drugs, but I wasn't making any money, right? I was losing money. So she took over because she's a good Al-Anon, right? And she started selling the drugs. And so she would give me my issue, right? She'd give me what I needed. And then she would make money, and her and my daughter would go shopping. And she could pay the connection, right? But at the end, it was ugly, you know, and I had her by the throat. And she threw those drugs on the ground. She goes, I don't care, I'm tired, I'm sick and tired of doing this, right? And that's where we had to go, you know, in order for me to eventually go to rehab, eventually find Alcoholics Anonymous, eventually work the steps, eventually be of service to others, you know, and eventually, I don't know what the hell we're doing up here, but eventually we get to come up here and share, right? But thank you guys so much for being here. Is my time up? Yes, okay. My time's up, and I'm going to let my wife do the rebuttal. Thank you.
I can almost hide like the Wizard of Oz here, huh? Hi, my name's Perla.
Hey, Perla. Hi, Perla.
And I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. And when I first got here, I didn't understand why people said that. It was like, how can you be, grateful to be married to an alcoholic? Because by the time I got here, it wasn't pretty anymore, you know. And it took a long time for me to get here into his sobriety. He went to, like he said, he went to that recovery home, hospital, and I forgot I was going to read something, but that's okay. But I would take my daughter down every Friday. We would spend the week and see him, and then I would bring her home on Sunday, and then she'd go to preschool, and coming Friday, we would do the same thing over and over again, you know. And at one time, right before he was going to get out, he says, "Judy wants to talk to you." Judy was one of the nurses at the rehab home. I go, "I don't want to talk to Judy," you know. And he goes, "Well, you know, she wants to talk to you about going to Al-Anon." And I go, first of all, I didn't know what Al-Anon was. And second of all, I didn't belong there. There was nothing wrong with me. It was him. You know, if he just behaved himself, everything would be okay. I had no part in it, you know. And so, once again, I would leave and I'd come back and they'd go, "Judy wants to talk to you." And I'd dodge her through the hallways, you know. And then one time she caught me and she took me into this little closet, like right there, you know. She goes, "You know, Robert's gonna need some support when he gets home. And, you know, there's another 12-step group, which is for the family members. And I really think you should go to it, you know." I go, "No, I'm not." She goes, "What?" And I go, "No, there's nothing wrong with me. It's all him, you know. He's the one that has the problem. He's the one, you know, causing all the issues. I'm not going." And so she knew, she must have known. She knew I wasn't ready, you know. So she said, "Oh, okay." So when it was time for him to go home, I packed him up and took him home, and he ran off the very next day, you know, and I'm going like, "Now what?" You know, but going back to the part of why I felt I didn't have a part in it, you know, Robert shared about how I would always pick up the pieces. Now, who jeopardizes their family by doing, you know, dealing drugs? You know, what could that have done to my family? Had we gotten arrested for that, they would have taken my daughter away. You know, and I didn't think of any of that stuff until after I came into program. You know, and it took me 2.5 years in recovery, in Robert's recovery, for me to decide to go to meetings. And I only went because, once again, he left, you know. And the true thing about that story, my first rebuttal, is that he said, "Jack and I are going to go down to Long Beach and spend a weekend on a yacht with his friends." And I go, "Okay." He goes, I go, "You're just going to go for the weekend?" He goes, "Yeah, I'll be back after the weekend's over." And I go, "Okay." Well, the weekend came and it was over and there was no Robert, you know. And about a week later, he called. Actually, he didn't call. He had his sponsor's wife come to my house and say, "Robert says he needs to spend some time away. So he wanted to know if I could come by and pick up some things for him." And I go, "Yeah, sure." So I packed everything in that house that belonged to him and went and drove it to Paso Robles and set it on their porch. And I go, "There, you can have him," you know. And he was gone 6 months, you know. But what it did was it made, I was still taking care of things at home and stuff, but it made life so uncomfortable that I decided to go to Al-Anon. You know, and I remember the first meeting that I went to, there used to be a meeting in Templeton. And I really didn't want to go, you know, and I took my kids with me just so that I wouldn't be alone. And I remember looking at that clock and just looking at that clock and going, okay, we're getting close. It's getting ready, you know. But I heard two things in that meeting that kept me coming back. And the first thing was, it said, you know, if you don't think our program's for you, that's okay, but give us a chance. Come to 6 meetings before you decide whether we're for you or not. And I thought, okay, I can commit to 6 meetings. And then a little bit later in that meeting, I was sitting there, and I swear, somebody was looking in the windows of my house. They shared my story, you know? And I related to what the disease of alcoholism can do to people's lives. So I went to my second meeting. It was at the Oaks Street Church in Paso Robles. And once again, I was sitting there going, oh, I really don't want to be here, but I'm going to be here. And I remember as soon as that meeting was over, I was up and out that door. And this lady followed me. And she goes, can I talk to you for a second? And I go, yeah. And she goes, you know, you kind of have like a double whammy. And I go, a double whammy? I go, what do you mean? And she goes, well, you're not only dealing with the effects of alcoholism. She goes, you're also dealing with the male Mexican ego. And I thought, what? And it was true. You know, it was true. And so she gave me her phone number, and her and I started this relationship. I asked her to be my sponsor, and she says, you know, I don't like that word sponsor. I will be your loving friend, and you're more than welcome to call me anytime. And later on, I found out that that woman was actually married to his sponsor, you know. And the funny thing is that I could go to her and share about what was going on with me, and he could go to him and share what was going on with him, and never once did that interfere with each other's program, you know, because they knew about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and how they work, you know. And that lady was my sponsor until she passed away about 3 years ago. And you know, we went over to her house when he was ill. We went over there and we would help her, and we'd take meals. And Robert would help clean up Tom if he needed to. And it showed me a whole different side of my husband that I didn't know, you know. And it's because of the program and these 12 steps that he's able to do that, have a relationship with the man. And, you know, he's just such a different person nowadays than he was before. I remember before program, I used to think, oh, why do I have to keep doing this? Why doesn't he just, you know, do what he's supposed to do? You know, and today I learned from my husband. You know, he is a very good example of 12-step programs. Who would have thought I would ever say that he was teaching me, you know? But today I look to him for examples also. He knows his book forward and backwards. And he'll be talking to sponsors, and he'll say, wait, let me get my book. And he goes and he gets his book and he starts reading, and I'm going like, how does he do that, you know? But that's just the way that he works his program, you know? Coming into these rooms, he shared earlier about how I used to do all the laundry and the housekeeping and the yard work, because I wanted it all to look good, you know, because if it looked good on the outside, nobody would know what was going on in the inside, you know. And I would go to work. I always worked this whole time. He would have his little periods where he had work. He had jobs that were seasonal, and like during the winter, he didn't work. So now we're both retired, and I'll try to put a movie on. He goes, "Oh, I already seen that." I'm going, "What'd you do? Just stay home and watch movies all the time?" You know, but I've always worked, and I always thought I was putting on this big front at work, you know. And when he got sober, I shared that with some of my friends at work. And I go, you know, he has a problem. And I remember my coworker goes, "Honey, we knew that all along." You know, but I thought I was fooling everybody. And I wasn't fooling anybody at all, you know. And I think what helped me the most was learning about the disease of alcoholism. That's one thing that my sponsor really emphasized and really talked to me about. And the funny thing is, I have a brother that's a doctor, you know, and he still believes that it's a choice. You know, it is a choice, but it isn't a choice, because the alcoholic has a chemical imbalance in their body that once they take a drink, then they can't stop, you know. And he talked about sometimes I would have a drink at dinner and I go, "Oh, I don't like that." He's like, "Aren't you gonna finish that?" And I'd go, "No." And he'd go, "Why?" "Because I don't like the way it tastes." "But we paid for it." "I don't care." You know? And those are just kind of like the little gifts that that I get from these 12-step programs. You know, when I first got into these rooms, you know, the first step says we're powerless. I didn't believe I was powerless because I kept all the bills paid. I kept the house clean. I kept the yard mowed. I called in for him when he was sick so he still had a job. You know, I did all of these things that in my head said, "No, you're not powerless." You know, but if you read the rest of the step, it says that we're powerless over alcohol. And I was, because I had no control over him, you know, even though in my head I thought I did. You know, and the second part was the second step where they tell you, you know, restore you to sanity. And I thought, I'm not crazy. I did all these crazy things, but I wasn't crazy, you know. And then my sponsor taught me the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results, you know? And that's what I did. I did the same thing over, thinking it was gonna change it, and it didn't change it, you know? And so with her helping me work the steps and taking me through the fourth step, you know, I had to then go to the fifth step. Well, the fourth step, let's go back to the fourth step. Because I came into these rooms with tools. They weren't the right tools, but they were tools that I learned how to use in the disease of alcoholism, you know? And I knew, I perfected them. I knew how to use those tools. So in the inventory, I identified those tools, and then I had to make a decision whether I wanted to give those tools up or not. And if I stay consistent and go to meetings on a regular basis, if I've chosen to give one of those tools up, it works. But if I stay away from meetings, I revert right back to using those tools again. And my life goes a lot better and easier when I use the right tools and not those other tools. But they're still there. I haven't quite given them all up all the way, you know. And so then, you know, having to share. I didn't. Did I do that?
No.
We did that. You guys did that. You know, everything that I share here is nothing that I came up with. It wasn't a brilliant idea I came up with. All it is going to meetings, learning the slogans, learning when to use the slogans, learning what works in my life and what doesn't work in my life. There's no rules in these programs. We have steps that we follow, but we don't have the Al-Anon enforcer that says, no, you're doing it wrong. And if you do have an Al-Anon enforcer, you need to find a different enforcer, you know? Because I was always given suggestions. I wasn't ever told what I had to do. And had I been told what I had to do, I wouldn't have done it, because that's just the type of person that I am. Don't tell me what to do, because I won't do it. You know, and so I just wanted to, how long?
You're good.
Am I good? Okay. Dave asked me to share the little story, and this is how our program works in our life. I had this little story about our Chihuahua. We have a little 4-pound Chihuahua, and my daughter comes and picks her up on her days off and takes her, because she's not allowed to have dogs where she's at, but she can babysit for the weekend. So she took her one day on a Saturday, and we were in Santa Maria at a barbecue, and she called us frantically about 2 o'clock and says, I can't find baby. And I go, what? And she goes, I can't find baby. She was in the car, and now she's not in the car anymore. And I'm going, my first thought was, have you been drinking? She hadn't. And so I go, what do you mean you can't find baby? And she goes, I've looked everywhere. I can't find her, you know. She was in the car, and all of a sudden, she's gone. And I go, well, okay, we'll find her. Well, we were at a program function, so I didn't have the urgency to leave right away. And so Robert was frantic because baby's his little girl. And so finally we did leave and we were on our way. We get this other phone call from these other people or text. They needed baby formula. So we had to make a stop in Nipomo and get the baby formula, stop in Grover Beach and deliver the formula. And so then by that time it's dark. And I go, okay, well, let's stop in San Luis and see if by some chance we find her. So we went over there, and we're looking up and down the streets and everywhere, and we can't find her. And so I finally told Robert, okay, let's go. She's gone, you know. And she's the cutest little puppy, so nobody would hesitate in taking her. And so we were getting ready to leave, and I felt this lady walking behind me. And I could hear her shuffling, and I'm waiting for her to catch up, and she's like slowing down. As I slow down, she slows down. And so then I finally just turned around, went to her, and I go, have you by any chance seen a little black chihuahua? And she goes, oh yeah, Alan Bellhauser out in front of 7-Eleven. And he's been waiting all day to see who's gonna come back and get that chihuahua, because he knew somebody was gonna pick her up. So we go immediately over there, get her, and she's like in his jacket, all comfy. And she sees us, and she just kind of like looks at us, you know. And so she did come to us. She was happy where she was. I don't know. She was warm, and it was cold outside. But you know what? Had we not done what we were supposed to do, had we not stayed at that barbecue, had we not delivered that formula, had we not stopped, the timing was just perfect for everything. And today, that is how our higher power works in our life, you know. And we do it on a daily basis. You know, if I'm doing my higher power's will instead of my will, everything just falls into place. You know, I can try to force the pieces in the puzzle and be frustrated, or I can choose to follow my higher power's will. And when I do, things just kind of continue to work. And for that reason, I thank the program of Narcotics Anonymous, AA, Al-Anon, CODA, Alcoholics, Adult Children of Alcoholics, all of those programs all use the same 12 steps. And because of that, I look up to my husband today. I never thought I would, but I do. You know, I admire him, his patience, and the peace that comes across in his demeanor is just something else, you know. People ask us, how did you last for 49 years? Next month it's 49. Oh. I'm close enough. Close enough. You know, and I used to be all up in his business and trying to direct him and tell him what to do and this and that. And today I don't. You know, today I allow him to be who he is, you know. And I just believe that our higher power works in my life, in his life, in my daughter's life, in my son's life, and everybody that we come in contact with. You know, I believe that what my higher power wants us to do is just to reach out to as many people as we can to help them understand that there's help out there. Because I never knew there was another way of living. When I grew up in that era of drinking and using and dealing drugs and all that stuff, that was the only way we knew how to live, you know? It just all happened so gradually that it became the norm. And what I learned in these rooms was, that's not really normal, you know? What we have today is what's normal. You know, he goes to his meetings, I go to my meetings, he now goes to Al-Anon to deal with our daughter. She's not a bad kid either, but she does some things that she probably shouldn't do. And so he's learning how to deal with that in these rooms, you know, and I learned to just mind my own business. I remember when they told me I needed to mind my own business when I came into these rooms, I thought, how dare you? It's all my business, you know? And I had one way of doing it. It was either my way or no way. You know, what the programs taught me is that there is more one way to do it, more than one way to do it, you know? And what this program has done is it's given me the humility to be honest and look at myself, look at my part, and to decide to allow people to do what it is that they need to do on a daily basis. So I think I've kind of run out of stuff to say. I did want to read one thing. We do have promises in Al-Anon. And I'd like to leave you with that if you'd like. If we are willing to surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. We will become mature, responsible individuals with a great capacity for joy, fulfillment, and wonder. Though we may never be perfect, continued spiritual progress will reveal to us our enormous potential. We will discover that we are worthy of love and loving. We will love others without losing ourselves, and we will learn to accept love in return. Our sight, once clouded and confused, will clear and will be able to perceive reality and recognize truth. Courage and fellowship will replace fear. We will be able to risk failure to develop new hidden talents. We will be able to risk failure to develop new hidden talents. Our lives, no matter how battered and degraded, will yield hope to share with others. We will begin to feel and will come to know the vast of our emotions, but we will not be slaves to them. Our secrets will no longer bind us in shame. As we gain the ability to forgive ourselves, our families, and the world, our choices will expand. With dignity, we will stand for ourselves, but not against our fellows. Serenity and peace will have meaning for us as we allow our lives and the lives of those with love to flow day by day with God's ease, balance, and grace. No longer terrified, we will discover we are free to delight in life's paradox, mystery, and awe. We will laugh more. Fear will be replaced by faith, and gratitude will come naturally as we realize that our higher power is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Thank you very much.
At this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight, coming to us from Las Vegas, Alonzo B.